It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Monson Show. I am Kim Monson. I appreciate even each and every one of you joining us. You're each treasured, valued. You have purpose. Strive for excellence today. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And I'm very grateful for this team I work with. That is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Really, it's a great day to each day to get up and get to work with you people. So producer Steve, happy Thursday.
Yes, happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. And be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Monson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You will get first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent op-eds, our most recent podcast, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who are supporting us. We are an independent voice as we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do it. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, the latest silent thief, and that is government-induced inflation. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. And this week on America's Veterans Stories, we'd highly recommend to check that out at either 3 or 10 p.m. on Sunday. We interviewed Bear Owen. He was a Marine pilot during Vietnam War. Fascinating interview, and so would highly recommend that you check that out. I know that you particularly enjoyed that, Steve, because you're an Air Force guy and he's a pilot. And actually, we could have probably done more of an interview because you came in and you said, I think, did I hear you say, what, F-4s? Is that what I heard you say? And so you and Bear got into a conversation after we did the recording.
Yeah. He did what, the A-4, the A-6? And
right.
Eventually, you know, migrated to the F-4, which I am incredibly familiar with after my time in Germany. And I wanted to know more.
Yeah, fascinating interview, though, so be sure and check that out. And let's go ahead and jump in here to our wisdom for today. And that is Thomas Edison. He was an American inventor and businessman who had been described as America's greatest inventor. And he developed many devices and fields such as electric power generation, mass communication, sound recording, and motion pictures. He was born in 1847 and he died in 1931. And I was wanting to pull some opportunity quotes, because we're going to be talking with Ben Murray in segments 3 and 4. And he's a fiscal policy expert with Independence Institute, and he's written a piece that says that Governor Polis is Colorado's governor unemployment. It says how Governor Polis turned one of the country's strongest states' economies into a basket case. So I thought, let's do some work quotes. So this is what Thomas Edison said. He said, the first requisite for success is to develop the ability to focus and apply your mental and physical energies towards solving the problems at hand without growing weary. Because such thinking can often be difficult, there seems to be no limit to which most people will go to avoid the effort and labor associated with it.
Wow.
That's pretty fascinating, huh, Steve?
Now, did you already talk about the years that Edison lived?
Yes, I mentioned that. He was born in 1847. He died in 1931.
All right. So somewhere prior to 1931, he was already starting to observe this tendency that, you know, hard work is just too much for some people. And I'll kick back and I'll, see if I can find another way to get by.
Well, and back then there wasn't the quote-unquote safety net for people to pay people to not to work. And once we start to pay people to not work, we lose productivity and creativity and innovation in our society. And it then opens up the possibility for if people are not going to work and put their best foot forward, then, and they are being paid for not working, the question is, where does that money come from? Somebody out there is working, and then government steps in and uses force to take money via taxation, rules, regulations, whatever it is, and then they transfer that money. And we see that not only in programs right now with this huge unemployment. I see all kinds of signs out there, help wanted, that they want to hire people to work, and people are getting paid more to not work than to work. And that's not sustainable. When we talk about we want a sustainable energy, sustainable, this is not sustainable. We want a sustainable country, and we can't reward people for not working, Steve.
Well, did I send it to you? It's a picture of a sign hanging off the King Soopers gas pump and saying, sorry, we are out of gas. The issue is distribution. And there's not enough CDL tanker train drivers out there to get the gas out to the, you know, the end distribution point. So, hey, there's legitimate unemployment that I get, but we've entered into this other realm, and it's almost cancerous.
It really is, and it's by design. This is public policy that is doing this. And when we take a look at what is coming out of Washington, D.C. with the Biden, the Harris-Biden-Obama-Rice administration, and then also what we see happening here in Colorado. And it's kind of like Polis is Teflon. There's a lot of folks that think that he's more libertarian because they put that narrative out there. More libertarian. He issued over 400 executive orders during this scamdemic. And when I call it a scamdemic, I want to make sure to acknowledge that COVID, I know, is a real thing, but it's been the reaction, this stepping in by PBIs, those politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties that grabbed power, and they don't want to give it back now. But we're seeing the effects of that. And there is a law that was put into place by, I don't know if it was last year, or it was the year before, but it was the Equal Pay for Equal Work Act. And it is causing some employers to not look at Colorado. So I think that's very important to have this conversation. Of course, we'll talk with Karen Levine at the bottom of the hour. She is relentless in what she is doing to protect your private property rights, to protect single-family housing. And we'll talk with her. It looks like I see more houses or signs in yards that houses are for sale. So perhaps there's a little bit more inventory. So we'll talk with her about both of those things. Let's go to this very first headline, Steve. And this is from the Epoch Times. And it says, the FDA is to add a warning about the neurological disorder linked to the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. And it says that this vaccine, or experimental drug, we really should call it what it really is because it's not been approved by the FDA, says that this experimental drug vaccine is linked to a rare neurological disorder known as Guillain-Barré syndrome. While J&J confirmed it is in discussions with federal agencies, the FDA is announcing revisions to the vaccine recipient and vaccination provider fact sheets. Now, first of all, I'm wondering, is everybody getting those fact sheets when they are getting their experimental drug vaccines? It says it's going to include information pertaining to this observed increase risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome following the vaccination. The FDA said the benefits of the vaccine outweigh the risks, but the determination was made based on an analysis of vaccine adverse event reporting, that's VAERS data, which found that there has been about 100 preliminary reports following vaccination with this Johnson, they'd had that written wrong, vaccine after approximately 12.5 million doses were administered. That is interesting.
Well, I find it a little bit somewhat reassuring to a degree, because we have been asking now for how long, where is the FDA? No matter who's making the vaccine, the FDA has not blessed it, but at least they're still, you know, hovering around and looking for issues that, you know, that might be out there. So, you know, to a degree, it's reassuring.
Well, yes, unless you got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, then you might kind of wonder, say, gosh, I wish I had a more of an opportunity for informed consent on this. And that is our next headline. And this is, again, from the Epoch Times. They're doing a great job. And we're going to have Josh Phillip on next week. It says that a nurse is blowing the whistle on the medical industry, says they're not offering informed consent. And last week, America's frontline doctors came to speak in Kansas City, Missouri. And one of the founders, Dr. Simone Gold, brought her message that COVID-19 is nothing to fear and that there are treatments available. At the start of the pandemic, she was fired after speaking out in support of the anti-malaria medication hydroxychloroquine. One has to ask, you have an effective treatment. People have been using this for years and years and years, and she was fired for that. So first of all, they wanted to tap down the fact that there were treatments out there. And at the time, President Donald Trump was praising the effectiveness of the drug. But shortly after, the FDA revoked emergency use authorization for it. Now, recent studies are confirming that low-dose hydroxychloroquine combined with zinc and azithromycin was an effective therapeutic approach against COVID-19. The Epoch Times interviewed Sarah Absher, a registered nurse who worked in the field for 8 years but quit this spring and decided to volunteer with America's Frontline Doctors after what she witnessed. She expressed her passion for the medical freedom fight and offered previously unseen materials to support her claims. And she began by introducing herself, "I love being a nurse and had the same concerns as Dr. Gold when we saw what was going on." Says Absher worked through the pandemic up until March 17th of this year. She said she hoped that things would change after the election, but when the big vaccine push came, she knew that she couldn't, in good conscience, stick with the common narrative on COVID-19. She said part of our job is to gather informed consent. With these vaccine trials, they're not offering informed consent. They say it's safe for pregnant women, but pregnant women were excluded from the trials. And clinical data on the participation of pregnant women was in the vaccine trials. She said vaccine talking points. Then she continues to go through this. I would recommend that you check this out at the Epoch Times. And once again, the concern here is transparency. And Donald Trump, like him or not like him, he was bringing clarity to issues and he was bringing transparency to issues. And that is what we want with this whole vaccine push, with the election integrity. We're seeing Secretary of State Jenna Griswold here in Colorado trying to thwart transparency. And the question is if there's no there, then why can't there be transparency to look at that? So we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of our great partners. They have 5 locations. That's Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, Colorado Springs, and Loveland. And Steve, the girls were over last night. You snuck in last night. Did you happen to get any wings by any chance?
Well, I declined because I just recently was on my way home from dinner. But I was just checking out the crowd and the crowd control. It was intense.
It was intense. We had quite an evening, and that it's just a bunch of girls that get together to learn. We actually had Glenn Rhodes on and Mike Young. Both of them are experts regarding electromagnetic pulses and also the electric grid. And it was really a fascinating conversation. The girls left. Many of them said that they had learned a whole lot. But we do this all around camaraderie and food and wine, and it's really a great time. And I always like to support Hooters because they're such a great supporter of the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. And of course, those smoked wings are really delicious. We're going to go to break. When we can come back, we have some more headlines that we want to let you know about. Karen Levine's going to be here talking about real estate, and then Ben Murray about governor unemployment. That is Colorado's governor unemployment, Jared Polis. We'll be right back.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our great upcoming guests, our most recent op-eds, and our most recent podcasts. We're going to be ramping those up again. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And thank you to each and every one of you who contribute to support us. And I want to go to this first headline here, and it is from Fox News. It says, Nikki Haley blasts Blinken's invite to UN experts on racism, minority issues. She said, this is insane. Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley on Wednesday tore into the Biden administration for extending an invitation to the UN envoys on racism and the minority issues to make an official visit to the U.S., describing the move as insane. China has 1 million Uyghurs in concentration camps. Cuba is beating protesters, and Venezuela is torturing political prisoners, Haley said in a statement to Fox News. Yet Biden's Secretary of State is inviting the UN to investigate human rights in the United States, the freest, fairest country in the world. This is insane. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Tuesday said he was inviting these independent experts to make official visits to the U.S. and would extend further invitations to other envoys who are appointed by the UN Human Rights Council. And he is quoted as saying, as the president has repeatedly made clear, great nations such as ours do not hide from our shortcomings. They acknowledge them openly and strive to improve with transparency. In so doing, we not only work to set the standard for national responses to these challenges, we also strengthen our democracy. Wait, I think we're a constitutional republic, and give new hope and motivation to human rights defenders across the globe. I have to say, I agree with Nikki Haley. America is not perfect. We realize that. But America is the freest, fairest, best place on the planet to live. I don't think that we need to invite the UN in, and because this UN, the United Nations, doesn't really like America. So why would you have people come in that don't like us to look at for our shortcomings? Because there will be shortcomings. But how about we look at the big picture? And I think the clearest example that America is not a racist country is take a look at what's going on down at the border with President Biden and his Harris Biden Obama Rice administration, basically just opening the door at the southern border. If we were a racist country where people were afraid of what would happen to them when they got here, you would not see all these different black and brown people crossing the border to get to America, because if it was as bad as they say it is, they wouldn't be doing that. I think that's all you have to take a look at, Producer Steve.
Well, and then also look at Blinken's description of these people. Independent experts. Oh, please. It's like asking the fox to come in and, you know, give you his opinion of the chicken coop.
I know. I know it. And on that note, this administration, this is really, I want to say, empowered in a really bad way. And did you see this, that the Olympic Committee is thinking about rebranding the American flag? Did you see that?
I did, and I think Hannity was one of the first ones to kind of explode on this one. Says, we already have a flag.
I tell you what, sports, I used to love sports. And it's really I don't have a lot of time to watch them these days, but it's really taken away the joy of watching young people, talented people compete. And I mean, I remember people when they won the gold medal, they no matter what color they were very excited to hold up the American flag. But this is once again just this continuing trying to degrade America, to make to tell people not to be proud about America. And this is just very, very concerning. But that makes me want to move over to one other thing, and that is on this divisiveness that President Biden is doing this whole agenda out there. And that is Reggie Carr, you know, our friend.
With,
I'm a Trumpster. Has actually starting something new. And I tell you what, let's go to break. Before we do that, though, I think Karen Levine is going to be on the join us here in just a little bit. So let's go to break. And when we come back, we'll continue on. And before we go to break, I have on the line with me a RE/MAX award-winning realtor, Karen Levine. She's a longtime friend of mine, as well as a sponsor of both of the shows. If you're buying or selling a home or looking to buy a new build, you need to have Karen Levine on your side of the table. Karen Levine, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
I tell you, I'm seeing more for sale signs in some of the yards here in the metro area. What are you seeing regarding supply?
Well, it's always exciting that what your perception is backed up with data. And we just got our Colorado Association of Realtors market overview reports. Those came out here in the last 48 hours. And yes, we did see more houses on the market. We saw over 7,000 new listings in the metro area in June, which was just 6% more than we saw last June, which is interesting. Our inventory, though, is still down from last June. Last June, we had over 8,000 single-family homes on the market, and this June, we only had just shy of 3,200, but still more than we've seen over these last couple of months, really after since the beginning of the year, we saw more inventory come on the market, which means that's more choices for buyers in the marketplace.
Are you seeing then, I know that it had really been a seller's market. Are you seeing a softening in some of these prices now, maybe moving away from people having to offer above what the asking price is?
It is very price dependent is what we're seeing. We still have lots of activity in that 450 to 550 price range because that's really affordability. The median price metro-wide is at 485, and that's up 25% from last year. So affordability is still a challenge, but we are seeing a little bit of softening as far as competition because there was a little more inventory to choose from. And we think that'll be the case here for at least the next 6 to 8 weeks. And that's very seasonal. We see this every June, July, and August. We see our inventory increase, kind of activity backs off a little. People are taking family vacations, and especially this year, since last year we were all locked in our homes, this year more people are getting out and about and traveling, seeing our state, those type of things.
And people are doing that because they getting ready for school as well.
Exactly.
Kids going to school. What about your fight to protect private property rights? I'm looking at some of the things that Patty has in the packet, and you're going to be on next week. But these growth boundaries that we have had in metro areas is actually, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. If you can't build more homes and there's more demand, you're going to see prices go up. And I almost see this then as a kind of a backdoor on single family zoning, because we're seeing about talking about building maybe a, you know, another dwelling on this property. And in some ways that sounds good, but Karen, I'm concerned that we're seeing all these backdoor attacks also on single family housing.
We are. And Kim, you and I have seen many articles that Patty has brought to our attention with things that the Biden administration are putting just small sentences in these stimulation packages that incentivize our states to move away from single family zoning. And I brought that to the attention of some of the leaders at the National Association of Realtors meetings last week. And it's interesting because they know it's a fight we need to be in, but I think they're approaching it looking at some of the pieces that are more tangible and easier to explain to our policymakers and in hopes of getting to the bigger problem or the bigger issue.
Well, and I have seen this over the years, thinking that this can be negotiated through policy. And what has happened is we've continued to lose more and more, quote unquote, freedom on these particular issues. And now that we really understand what's going on, I think it's important that we step in and be bold on this. And Karen, you are being, in a very kind way, but you understand the issues and you're being bold on this, and you volunteer on the local, the state, and the national level. And I think when we look back on history, you and people like you who understand the issues and are informing people is going to be, I think, a very important thing, because home ownership, we've looked at this, how it's helped the middle class create wealth, and we've got to make sure that we protect it. We've got something down here in Douglas County, and this was something under the the Obama administration, and Biden, it looks like, is starting to bring some of these rules back, and this is on affirmatively furthering fair housing. And the federal government comes in and dangles federal dollars, and the different municipalities and counties, one, they take the money, and then they dole this out to different maybe non-governmental agencies. And one has to ask, is that really the proper role of government? But then what they did is they're kind of attaching different rules. If you take that money, then you have to do certain things in your zoning. And back in 2015, the Douglas County commissioners voted to not take that money. And I had, in fact, gone down to testify on that. And then the Trump administration under Ben Carson, I wish they would have just gotten rid of the AFFH, but they rolled back the rules. And now it looks like the Harris-Biden-Obama-Rice administration is going to try to bring back some of those rules. And so this whole question is going to be coming up in Douglas County here in a week or so. And I think it's important that people are aware of that, Karen.
Most definitely. And I, as you said, Kim, negotiation and policy is appropriate most of the time, some of the time, but there is a time where we as American people need to stand firmly and just say no.
Mm-hmm.
And
so we need,
that's difficult, you know, but if you really believe in what's important in the American value, we have to quit being so, I guess, wishy-washy.
Well,
and stand firm.
Well, for sure. And the other thing is, Karen, is it has been a process for you and I to get to a point where we've really understood what's going on. And that's why the show is so important. And working with great sponsors like you is so important, because they make it so complicated that then it is difficult to stand firm. And that's why once we understand what's going on, we do need to stand firm. But it takes a lot of mental gyrations to understand what's happening.
Most definitely. Most definitely. So we just appreciate that you share the information so people can be empowered to be able to stand more firm in what's important for them.
And Karen Levine, you're a great partner of the show. How can people reach you if you're going to buy your home, sell your home, you're looking at a new build? Karen Levine is the person to talk to. How can people reach you?
You can reach me at 303-877-7516.
That's 303-877-7516, and you're going to be on the show next week. You'll be in studio co-hosting, so that'll be a great day.
We will see you then. Have a good weekend.
Thank, Now, we'll talk to you next week. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk with Ben Murray regarding his piece, Colorado's Governor Unemployment. You won't want to miss it.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. As well. So we're going to continue on here as we're going through these headlines here. And through this whole scamdemic, we saw all of this money that was being printed and then doled out to the different states. And Colorado received billions of dollars. And the Center Square is reporting that the Democrats are looking to keep our refunds that we are supposed to get as Coloradans under the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. And it says, Colorado Democrats are looking to keep billions in tax revenue rather than refunding the money to taxpayers. And I guess the Denver Post reported that. Under Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, taxpayers see refunds when the state's revenue grows faster than population plus inflation. A recent economic analysis from the nonpartisan legislative council staff showed that Colorado is expected to exceed its budget cap by $2 billion over the next 3 years, while the governor's budget staff published a more optimistic forecast saying that those excess tax funds could reach $3 billion. They say we're going to see dollars that certainly could be utilized for our budget priorities, going back in ways that aren't as tailored as focus, Representative Julie McCluskey, Democrat from Dillon, told the Post. When we can make additional investments, does government really make investments, in those needs and services, it feels like the responsible thing to do. Colorado voters in recent years have rejected allowing state governments to permanently keep their tax refunds. Democrats do have options on the table, as Tabor doesn't limit lawmakers' use of enterprise funds, which those are the ones funded by fees, your favorite word there, Steve, which they have taken advantage of in recent sessions. Senator Chris Hansen, Democrat from Denver, sits on the Joint Budget Committee, and he told the Post that Democrats have a list of options of adjustments they can make to these funds in order to keep the money. Senator Bob Rankin, Republican Carbondale, who also sits on the JBC, questioned the need for retaining that tax revenue when the state's budget has been injected with federal stimulus dollars from the pandemic. There's an awful lot of money and covers these same 3 years, Rankin told the Post. So why should we find clever ways to defeat Tabor when, in fact, we have all the federal money there? And let's just think about that, Steve. If we have $3 billion... and we refund that back to Colorado taxpayers, they then have money to make investments in things that they want to. And I submit to you that that would jumpstart the economy much more than government keeping this and doling it out to, as they say, different services, when in essence, we're realizing that there's all kinds of administrative costs. This is just a way to continue to fund government and make it bigger, and the bureaucracy's bigger, Steve.
Well, don't you love her choice of words, her being McCluskey's? We can make additional investments in those needs and services. Well, there's not a really definitive explanation of what that word investments really means. And again, it's just more of the same. I mean, what did we see shortly after Trump took office and his tax cuts, both corporate and individual, you know, started taking effect? You know, the economy just took off. And why? Because of what you just said. It's like people now have that money, corporations have that money to do what they really want to do.
Yes. And so the gyrations that they're going on, through down there to different ways to try to redefine things so that they can keep that money instead of refunding it back to the people of Colorado. And this is an amendment to our Colorado Constitution. And once again, I continue to say this, Trump, whether or not you like him or disliked him, he has brought clarity to these issues. I don't see how much clearer it can be that these Democrats down at the Colorado State House, they are not really working for everyday hardworking people. They are working for government. They are working for the bureaucracy. And we need to make sure that we remember that when we go and vote in this 2022 election and also this 2021 election. And there will be some issues out there that are very important. Of course, one of those we've been talking about is this LEAP initiative. And there's a couple of op-eds on my website. Patty did one and I did one. And that is, I did 10 reasons why to decline to sign the initiative 25, if people come up and ask you about that. Speaking of petitions, though, the Denver Republicans have done something that's pretty interesting. And that is, this is by the chairman of the GOP, and that is Garrett Flicker. And he said that Regan Miller and Garrett dropped off petitions from the Denver sales tax for the Denver sales tax cap and the Denver Homelessness Initiative, and they dropped those off at the Colorado State Secretary of State. And they are headed to the ballot November 2021, they hope. And they're certifying those petitions as we speak. He says, once these measures are on the ballot, educating people on the potential homelessness law will be a tall order. One of the issues we are running into is Denver's residents do not like the idea of homeless encampments. Denver voters approved a new, as of November 2020, sales tax, which brings in at least $40 million yearly. This new tax specifically deals with Denver County homelessness. However, in their own documents about the new sales tax, Denver officials say they want to use the money to build housing for single mothers, and housing single mothers will do nothing for the homeless population. Our ballot measure forces the city and county of Denver to set up safe places for these people. Showers, potable water, lights, garbage collection, and bathrooms will be provided in these areas. Rather than have the homeless scattered all over the city, they will be invited to stay in a secure area. They said this enables everyone who is key to the rehabilitation of the homeless, like mental health services, drug and alcohol counseling, family members, probation and parole officers, clergy, to have easy access to them. And they say we save the best for last. Once the homelessness initiative is law, the language allows homeowners to take legal action against the city and county of Denver if they do not remove trespassers from private property after a complaint is filed. The city has 72 hours, and then the homeowner can sue for the loss of enjoyment of their property. And Garrett says he's been working on this project since last fall, and he's really excited they're able to get that to that next step. And he will continue to update this. This seems like a very creative thing to do, for sure. And it's amazing, though, that there has to be a new law to say that you have got to get people off of private property that are trespassing. And I submit to you, Steve, this is once again what's going on with this continual assault on private property rights.
Well, this is a tough nut to crack because homelessness is an issue all over the nation. And, I guess one of the first things they learned when they first dove into it and tried to take the issue on head first was that there are some people who chose to be homeless. So how do you deal with things like that?
Well, and, you know, back in the old days, we called them hobos. Remember, there were songs about hobos, and they were called hobos. But homelessness, I submit to you, it's now an industrial complex. It's all about big money. And you look at this sales tax that was passed, $40 million. We are now seeing that there is so much money in homelessness, or take any issue, education, affordable housing. There is so much money in these issues that those that are controlling the purse strings, if they actually solve the problems, then in effect, their jobs would go away. So instead of, as more and more money has come into homelessness, if you will, we've seen instead of getting rid of homelessness, it has exploded. I mean, there is a direct correlation on that, Producer Steve.
Oh, there is. And, it became, how these things are tied together. The All-Star game of all things, what it forced, or at least what appeared to Denver was doing, was cleaning out all the areas in adjacent to or close by Coors Field. And now that the All-Star game is behind us, of seeing what's going to happen, are they going to filter back in slowly but surely? You know, what's to become this? I'd like, you go down this road often, and I like it. The industrial complex. That phraseology, as far as I know, was first coined by Eisenhower, back in the 50s, warning about the industrial military complex, or the military industrial complex. I got my words backwards. But the terminology and the issue is pretty much the same. You take a particular problem and you attach that mentality to it and make it an industrial complex.
Well, and there is always money and power involved in whatever industrial complex there is. And once again, there are cities that do not have this homelessness problem. You primarily are seeing this in your Democrat-run cities. And one has to question why. And certainly it pulls on our heartstrings when we see that people are down on their luck. And that happens all the time in history. But one of the things, when we talk about all this money that's going to be spent for this particular, it sounds like more permanent spaces, I have to ask, why on earth are we not also making people responsible for, so they're talking about these encampments, keeping your area clean. If you are living there, you have responsibilities to pick up trash, if there's going to be these trailers with showers, everybody takes a turn at cleaning the showers there. But instead, because there's so much money involved, Steve, we now treat these people, instead of like human beings, treat them like pets, providing everything for them, feeding them, clothing them, where they don't have the responsibility to do some things for themselves. And there is a small percentage of people that cannot do things for themselves. And it used to be that charities would step in to help that. But once you got government involved and all of this money, then the problems become bigger and bigger and bigger. But we are not treating the homeless like human beings, the dignity of they have valued and they need to step forward and do work. Instead, we're treating them more like pets. And in doing so, I think we take away that dignity. And I think that we also, as you can see, we are feeding this big non-governmental or governmental, this whole big industrial complex that people are living off of this particular problem. And it really breaks my heart, Steve.
Well, it's funny in a quirky way, not humorous, that when you were reading the story and it talked about all the services that if you get these people in a confined area, all these services like mental health services, drug and alcohol, family members, probation, parole officers, to have easy access to them. And that was my first thought. It's like you're making them sound like they're pets.
Right. And I think there's something that we really need to understand that when Karen and I were talking about understanding the issue. Again, we need to understand this. So I laud what Garrett is trying to do there in Denver to address this issue. But I also think that we need to go one step further, and that is that human beings have responsibilities to help take care of themselves. And I've always thought that those that are standing on the side of the road with the sign, In a way, that's the job. I see them arrive. They get everything set up, get their coffee lined around, and it's like a job. It's like if, in fact, you were working to keep that little corner the cleanest place in Denver, picking up trash and making sure that looked great. I mean, I think that you're capable of doing that. So let's go to break. Before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool is another great sponsor of the show, and they're a family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And it's a great little, I love it. I've been out there a couple of times buying gifts, and they have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. Whether or not you are a chef or a sportsman or a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. Their website is castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue on.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
Yeah, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure to check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. We've talked a lot about transparency, and we've talked a lot about elections. And right now, with what you see with the Texas Democrats, that they have gotten on a private plane without masks and gone to Washington, D.C., because they do not want to take the votes on some of these voter shoring up our elections laws. This is not the way it was ever supposed to be. When we were creating our country, all of our representatives got into a room and they hashed it out. But they always had this goal towards freedom and liberty for everyday people. We are seeing that this Democrat Party is all for government, all for themselves, all for power. And we've seen this very clearly. Again, said it several times today during the show. Trump, whether or not you liked him or not, we're bringing clarity to these issues. So, Steve, the fact that these Texas Democrats got on a private, or not a private plane, I think it was, but maybe like a charter plane, but it was not a commercial, without masks, because everybody else is supposed to be wearing masks when they're flying around, but they didn't have to. And they're in Washington, D.C., instead of back in Texas, doing what they're supposed to do. It just kind of shows the immaturity also. If they don't get their way, they want to pick up their ball and go someplace else.
If I were a citizen of Texas, no matter what party I was for, I'd just be livid. Number one is the cost of that operating that aircraft. Between the cities that it flew. Number two, they're going to stay there for a couple days. Who's paying for their housing, you know, their hotels and whatnot, and their meals? I mean, when they get back, first of all, when they do get back, they might not get a very good reception. I'm hearing the governor saying that they will be arrested the second they they get off the plane. But they certainly better not be putting in some kind of expense report for this unplanned trip. That's just that side of it. Then what you just said, is this good governance? All right, so you know you're going to take a beating on this particular vote. That's the way our system works. Mm-hmm. But you're going to say, nope, we're not going to let you have a quorum. We're out of here. That's good governance.
Well, and it plays right into what Biden's trying to do with revamping our voting laws. And if, in fact, this happens, my friends, I'm concerned that we will have one party rule in our country. And we can see that one party rule doesn't care about everyday hardworking Americans. This one party rule cares about government. It cares about power. And I've been in a variety of different meetings this last week, and we're all trying to figure this out about what the Democrat Party is all about. And it's all about power. And people, many times we think that money is the real driving force, but the real thing about government is power, Steve.
Well, where else did we see a better example of that in 2020, leading up towards November? How many state houses were under some level of, not assault, but there was obviously that they were out to change the voting rules under the guise of the virus? Mm-hmm. And strange coincidence here was all these blue states, or not necessarily blue states, but states that ended up being very controversial on November 4.
Well, and Steve, what I have seen, I went down to the state house last year, I guess it was, to testify on several different issues. And I was surprised at the way the Democrat chairs of some of these different committees and the way they treated the people that had come down to the people's house to talk about the issues, to be heard, to make their voices heard. And I really felt it was very disrespectful. And as I've looked at this legislation that's come through in this last legislative session here in Colorado, it's like they don't seem to feel like they are going, they don't look like they think that they will ever lose an election. And then that makes you wonder, what about our election integrity here in Colorado? And there are a group, the U.S. Election Integrity Plan, which is looking at what's happened here in Colorado. And of course, we were one of the first ones to do mail-in voting. And we have ballot harvesting, and up to 10 ballots. But who's to say that you get 10 here, 10 there? This whole mail-in voting thing, while there is great convenience in it, I think we need to figure out how to have that convenience. But I think we need to also really take a look at where we have these vulnerabilities. And these people down at the state house right now, they do not act like they think that they will ever lose an election. And that's why this whole thing is so important. So the Texas Democrats who've left because they don't want to take a vote there in Texas and have gone to Washington, D.C., they say that they're trying to buy time for Biden to get out there and sell this H.R. 1, which is the big federal government takeover of our elections. And if that happens, my friends, I kind of hate to think what would happen to our country.
Well, then you have, you know, the big guy himself and his, whatever you want to call what he did in Philadelphia, what is it, Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. I mean, he basically said any of these efforts to clean up voting integrity was an assault on our democracy. And mm-hmm. You know, I keep banging on that word, wondering why they keep banging on that word, that I think they're overusing the word democracy and they keep jamming it down the public's throat so that people will stop thinking about anything else but that word democracy and not constitutional republic. And then, you know, we all remember back in 2016 when Hillary basically lambasted all Trump supporters, calling them what? Deplorables, right? Mm-hmm. What did Biden say the other night? That anybody who was out there trying to improve our voting system, make it more secure, was worse than the Confederate plantation owners. So, I mean, that's name calling to a new level. And what percentage of the population or of the country are you insulting?
Well, I think a big, big portion of it. And I think that there are people that are really waking up. They're not woke. They are waking up to this agenda that has been, it's been a long time. It's really been since the 70s that we've seen this move towards denigrating and degrading the American idea. And it was, again, kind of under, it would be, I can remember I would be in conversations with people or, you know, there might be different places and just these little digs here and there on the American idea. And if you challenged it, you kind of looked a little tin hatty. But it's been so subtle in coming. But now that we know what's going on, Steve, that's why it's important that we search for, look at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. That's why we are dedicated to be an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity. And people may not always agree with this, but you can rest assured that we are doing our very best as we are looking at these issues to help you get your brains around them. So, Steve, it's very important that we shore up this election integrity here. What these Texas Democrats are doing is terrible. We need to stand against this H.R. 1 out there, this big voting thing. And we need to really stand for our country. And it is an honor to get to be with each and every one of you today. So our final quote for today from Thomas Edison is this. And he said, "Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. A genius is often merely a talented person who has done all of his or her homework. Opportunity is missed by most people because it is dressed in overalls and it looks like work." So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America. Tell them if I don't serve.